Blog Talk Radio.
Driver's license, or a student ID, or something, you have to, or even a social security number or something, mm-hmm. you know, that says you who you are, or, you know, we got to do that. I got to do that for jobs. You got to do it for everything. I mean, why you would think that they would want to have to do it for voting? You know, the most important thing that you do.
Let's read the next one in Texas. Last week, North Carolina 2013 state voting law, which eliminates the same-day registration and out-of-precinct voting and shortens the early voting window by 10 days, will be in place for the first time this year in statewide elections. A panel of three judges heard oral arguments about the law on September 25th, with one judge pointedly asking, why does the state of North Carolina not want people to vote? The case will likely end up in the Supreme Court, especially if the Fourth Circuit rules against the law. I don't know what they mean exactly by we have to vote in the town that we live in.
Right, but
I'm not sure about this. I don't know how big their precincts are. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's very hard to judge these things.
Unless you do an absentee ballot,
mm-hmm.
you can do absentee ballot. But, you know, what they're saying is that, you know, you have so many, you know, this early
same
voting.
Same-day registration.
Yeah, people would come in and register the same day to vote, okay, rather than being registered.
Before voting,
yeah. That one's a toss-up, but I think if they do register, they should have some kind of identification to see who the hell they are,
mm-hmm.
don't you?
Well, what they're saying is that if you registered to vote, you've already done all of that,
yeah.
So why do you have to show a photo ID, I guess? That's what they're saying.
Well,
I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But because
they're not
telling
us enough, really.
Yeah.
In Texas, last week, a trial ended in a challenge to Texas voter ID law requiring voters to display government-issued forms of identification. Under the stringent law, a concealed carry permit is a valid form of ID, but a student ID is not. Now, that's ridiculous. The judge is expected to rule soon on whether the law violates the Constitution or the Voting Rights Act, and if the decision comes out against the law, the state could appeal to take the case to the Supreme Court. I don't see anything wrong with the student ID.
I don't either. You know, they're telling you that they're registered, they're living somewhere. Student ID doesn't say that you're a citizen. That's another thing.
Yeah, but you're already registered to vote.
Not necessarily.
They're not saying that they're... Yes, they would be. You can't vote unless you're registered, but you have to bring an ID to prove that you are.
Yes. Okay, well, that makes sense. Okay, well, here, the update was the Supreme Court on September 29th blocked the early voting in Ohio. The order will stand until the courts act on an appeal by state officials. So that just happened yesterday or 2 days ago. Yeah. Anyway, excuse me, I'm sorry.
What are you doing? Go ahead.
I was just looking at that news.
Let's go on to the next thing.
You want to read something about this? I'm curious. I'm very curious. Now, this doesn't really have anything to do with the union, but it does have a lot to do with what we're going to be talking about, because one of the next articles was Richard Chomka talking to a group of people in St. Louis, white people, about racism.
Huh.
And I think it's important.
I liked it, Gregory.
I
was talking to somebody else recently. I don't know, we were at the Y. And we were talking about what happened in Ferguson.
Yeah.
And both of us are mothers. And we were appalled that that guy's body laid there for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, 4 hours.
And that the family wasn't allowed to, they were thrown out of there. That was their child.
I didn't understand.
They didn't understand that either, and were appalled and outraged by it.
Yeah, but at this
how that was handled. They felt that was just a travesty, outrageous, and cruel.
But this might have something to do
with
it.
Let's see what Dick Gregory has.
We saw Dick Gregory on something there the other night. What was it that we saw him
on? Was there a video?
Yeah, a video or something.
Where he spoke about it.
And it was very good. So let's look at this. See what he says.
That whole thing was awful.
Oh, that's terrible.
Obama, Ferguson exposed gulf of mistrust between cops and communities. That's true.
Well, that's true. I want to see what Gregory said, because we know what that one was about. But,
Why did they send us here without... Where
I don't know. Where is it?
It was like a come on.
Yeah.
Huh. So let's go to another.
Yeah, that's aggravating.
Yeah.
Go
back to, I want to...
Yeah, okay. Well, so much for that.
Well, anyway, a lot of people feel the same way. I mean... They just felt it was outrageous and disrespectful to have someone's body, I don't care what he did, just laying in the street like that for 4 hours and then taken away by some SUV, not even a funeral thing. Oh,
yeah,
terrible.
It was strange, you know.
And wrong,
because they wanted to cover stuff up, you know, and that's what they did.
That's the way it made me feel.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like. And I can understand what they're doing. Let's go back to that, because I wanted to read this article by on Trunka. Breaking white silence on racism.
Okay.
On September 15th, AFL-CIO Richard Trunka did something quite fascinating. He spoke to a labor audience in St. Louis about race and racism. What was particularly noteworthy is that he was not speaking to a large black or Latino audience.
Okay, let's see what he had to say.
Let's see.
I have known Richard Trunka for almost 25 years. He has been outspoken against race and racism, but what is significant here is that all too often, whites speak about race and racism to the victims of this oppression, specifically to African Americans, Latino, Asians, and Native Americans. No matter how powerful a speech it may be, it always begs the simple question, why are you telling us what we already know? Trunka decided to flip the script, seizing on the anger that has arisen in connection with the murder of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Trunka went to the Missouri AFL-CIO convention to, among other things, speak about race and class. His audience was not the tried and true, although it was racially mixed. Trunka was especially targeting his remarks towards white trade unionists, many of whom have contradictory attitudes toward race and racism. Trunka's remarks have set off a whirlwind of excitement on the internet, and so they should. Yet the problem that we confront is one that the union movement confronted in 2008, when the same Richard Trunka challenged white workers to put aside their racial biases and vote for Barack Obama. The problem is that his speeches in both cases were courageous and progressive. Nevertheless, the 2008 speech was not followed up by a broader dialogue in the trade union movement about race, and it is far from clear whether such a discussion will happen this go-around subsequent to his September 15th speech. Organized labor definitely needs a discussion about race. Such a discussion is not only about African Americans and whites, but certainly the entire racial spectrum of the U.S. We're in need of a discussion that helps whites in particular to come and understand how and why race as a method of social control was introduced into North America. Such a dialogue is not a touchy-feely exchange along the lines of too many well-intentioned but misguided multicultural programs. Rather, the dialogue needs to rest on history such that workers generally grasp the means through which they have been played against one another and who has actually gained.
The sort of dialogue we need must also tackle questions like immigration, and specifically why the dramatically different attitudes in white America toward immigration to the U.S. from Ireland and Russia compared with their attitudes toward immigrants from Mexico, the Dominican Republic, the Philippines, and Nigeria. Trumka deserves praise for his remarks.
I have to say, they weren't so nice here to the Irish. My mother remembers signs, Irish need apply, Irish go home.
They weren't very nice to the French either, the French Canadians. They really, people moved back down here in the 30s and 40s for work, they were called frogs, they were called,
Well, we were called mix, dirty Irish.
Yeah, and, stupid Frenchmen, And it's like, that was kind of we got it.
Our skin color was the same, so once you kind of...
But by the 60s and 70s, that kind of wore out because nobody gave a crap anymore. It was a different feeling. The 60s mm-hmm. were quite different. And it was a much more blended thing, and separation and civil rights were a big issue in the early 60s, whereas in the 70s, they had civil rights. Blacks and Hispanics and everybody had the right to vote, if they were, citizens. And so things changed dramatically, but, there's a big difference, I feel, this is my feeling, that 20 million illegal aliens is just, Come on. They aren't all Hispanic or whatever. There's 20 million of them that aren't documented that are coming in here, all right? Taking jobs that are away from citizens, milking the system terribly. All right, what do we got? All kinds of problems.
This wouldn't be happening if
hospitals, schools, everything.
This would not be happening if big business didn't want it to happen.
Of course,
they're abusing these people.
Absolutely.
And these poor people that are coming up from South America and the Central American countries, if I lived there, I'd be coming up too. I would try to get out of those places where everybody's being killed and murdered, and you don't have enough to eat.
Well, look, I can understand.
I can understand it. So, but they wouldn't be coming if big business didn't want them here to keep the wages low.
That's really true.
So you got mixed messages everywhere.
Yeah.
So
you're really right.
They like not having to pay people.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why I want to, my goal would be to improve the lives of people in Central and South America, our neighbors. I think we should spend money doing that.
Instead of supporting these cartels that are,
right.
Drug cartels.
And going over and bombing Syria.
Not only that, and cutthroat dictatorships.
And I'm also in favor, and I know you're not, of the people that are here having a path to citizenship so they can't be abused. And so that the wages stay up for everyone. That's why I'm in favor of that, Leo.
Okay.
And you can't say that doesn't make sense for the American worker, but that's how I feel about it.
Well, it does. It does. Yes, it does. But...
I don't like to see people.
Well, here's Joe Biden that talks to Hispanics. Says Obama will act on immigration.
Well, somebody better do something.
Let's see what he says. Joe Biden told frustrated Hispanic leaders Monday that President Barack Obama is absolutely committed to moving forward on comprehensive
immigration reform. Okay. Well, maybe he's going to talk. Let's see what he has to say.
Let's
see what he has to say.
We've heard that over 400 million vacation days go unused every year.
I hate that. They throw in commercials everywhere. Vice President, they're frustrated people for moving forward. He's going to do an awful lot, he said. And Biden said Obama was determined to move ahead, with or without Congress, and if they don't get something done by the end of this year, the president's going to do it. Well, Biden's remarks came as he and his wife, Jill, hosted a Hispanic Heritage Month reception Monday in their Naval Observatory residence.
Oh, which is a beautiful house, by the way.
Is it? Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
I've
driven by it.
Oh, okay.
Right. He honored Hispanic...
Is that his residence? Or
it belongs to the country.
The country's residence.
Yeah, the vice president always states it. Yeah.
He honored Hispanic education administrators and counselors, calling their heroes in the classroom and community. He said that the brilliance and potential of the Hispanic community will contribute to the future of the country, noting that 1 in 4 students in pre-K through 12th grade are Hispanics. Wow. Biden thanked the education advocates for guiding youth and helping to increase Hispanic college enrollment. Well, guests including Housing and Urban Development Secretary Julian Castro, U.S. Treasury Rosie Wield, and
voter advocate Henry Munoz. Guests enjoyed hors d'oeuvres and live music by the Army Latin Combo Band.
Okay.
Well,
that's nice. All right. So anyway, I guess what I'm getting at is that,
I think he should act on somebody should act.
Somebody got to act on something.
I mean, he promised to do something for them, and he should live up to that.
Yeah. But what?
But you understand now why I support him.
I think I can understand why you're supporting that, but at the same time, it's not going to help anybody.
Oh, well, it is.
It's not going
to
help.
I want wages to come up for ordinary people.
So I'd like to see that too, but, you know, even what you're going to happen is, it's going to happen. It's going to be worse. Well, here.
De Blasio's executive order will expand a living wage to thousands in New York, I guess.
Yeah, Mayor Bill de Blasio plans to sign an executive order on Tuesday, significantly expanding New York City's living wage law, covering thousands of previously exempt workers, and raising the hourly wage itself to $13.13 from $11.90 for workers who do not receive benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what that's about. But, you know...
Maybe hotel workers?
No, some exempt workers, too. Maybe there's waitresses and stuff like that.
Mayor Bill de Blasio plans to sign an executive order. The change is also intended to frame a looming debate in Albany, where Mr. de Blasio hopes to win the authority to set the citywide minimum wage at the same amount. If Mr. de Blasio succeeds in matching the minimum wage to the living wage, all hourly workers in the city would earn more than $15 by 2019, according to the city's projections.
That's like, 5 years from now.
The executive order will immediately cover employees of commercial tenants on projects that receive more than $1 million in city subsidies going forward. Workers who receive benefits such as health insurance will earn $11.50 an hour compared with $10.30 an hour before. While cautioning that it was notoriously difficult to develop projections related to economic development, the administration estimated that about 18,000 workers would be covered over the next 5 years. Roughly 70% of all the jobs at businesses that will receive new financial assistance from the city's Economic Development Corporation.
I'm not too thrilled about this because it takes... By 2019, for crying out loud,
it won't be
worth anything. You know, so it's like it'll be back down to $5, $6 an hour, what is it, $7 or $8 an hour.
Translate much.
No. So that's why this whole thing is a such.
If he was going to pay him that now, that'd be great.
Yeah, that would be a living wage. But, you know, before...
Not in New York City, but it'd be better than
what
they're
getting. Not in New York City, that's for damn sure, yeah. Not even Connecticut either. But, you know...
That's the Koch sisters,
This one I wanted to read, because I think this is...
Winners and losers of the week.
Denying Alec, winners and losers. For those of you, you know what Alec is? Alec members?
No.
Okay. It's the American Legislative Exchange Council. It's a conservative bullshit group. Okay. American Legislative Loser. Okay.
In our regularly weekly feature, they talk about those who have done things for working people and those who haven't. The winners are the hired housekeepers in Boston, who were fired 5 years ago and finally won a $1 million settlement.
Yeah.
Yay!
Runner-up, the NFL player, the union member, Torrey Smith, while a few NFL players have been making headlines for horrible actions, many others, like Smith, are working to help their communities.
The loser.
American Legislative Exchange Council. In a week that saw it losing numerous technology industry members, making it more difficult for the extremist group to promote policies that harm working families. Let me just go further into that so people know what it is. I think it's worth talking about. Free market group.
Yahoo, Yelp, Facebook, Google, and Microsoft reconsider their relationship with free market group ALEC.
Right. So let's see. Five tech giants have dropped a plan to or are expected to drop their membership in the American Legislative Exchange Council, a free market state focus group that has become a target of the left in recent years. The group maintains a library of model state and local legislation and connects businesses, nonprofits, and a substantial number of state lawmakers, offering corporate members a voice in policymaking process. But ALEC has come under fire in recent years for its support of what liberal groups say are conservative social and fiscal policies. Most recently, shareholders and nonprofits are aligned to pressure its corporate members, who pay at least $7,000 to $25,000 for such membership, to dump the organization over its environmental policies. Several technology companies have recently announced that they have dropped or expected to drop their membership, but their reasons differ. Yahoo, Yelp, and Facebook are the latest to issue statements about their involvement with ALEC, following announcements by Google earlier in the week and Microsoft this summer. Late Wednesday, Yahoo announced that it would have dropped its membership of ALEC while in the state, and he periodically... What's going on there? The announcement came hours after Yelp issued a statement acknowledging that it had allowed its membership to lapse several months ago after a year with the organization. In a statement, a spokesman for the review site said the decision was made only because the company had achieved what it joined ALEC to do, which was promote legislation that makes it harder for businesses to sue individuals over negative reviews. That's interesting.
Hmm.
We found that ALEC provided a unique forum to bring a good idea to the table. Director of Public Policy, Luther Lowe, said in a statement, "Our approach was not without irony and it invited a backlash, yet to ALEC's credit, our model bill passed unanimously, and such legislation now as anti-SLAPP laws are often championed by First Amendment advocates." Everybody has a reason for doing what they're doing, but the group is an arch conservative group. You know, that doesn't do anything for too many people. So that's what I was saying. This, Republican senators runners up once again, filibustering the Paycheck Fairness.
I don't even know what that is.
I don't either. Defeats Paycheck Fairness Act again. GOP filibuster. For a second time this year, a Senate Republican filibuster defeated the Paycheck Fairness Act. The legislation is designed to help women get equal pay for equal work by strengthening protections for workers who discuss their paychecks with each other and by requiring employers to prove their pay discrimination is based on factor other than gender. 51 Senate Democrats, male and female, and Vermont Independent Bernie Sanders voted to halt the Republican talk-a-thon, but supporters needed 60 votes to succeed. Now, why didn't they get those since they have a majority? You know?
Mm-hmm.
But female Republican Senator Kelly Ayotte, well, there you go, okay, and Susan Collins from Maine, and 37 of her GOP male colleagues towed the party line and voted to keep the filibuster going. Why would somebody like, why would a woman, all right, a woman senator, which I think she's a, I mean, it's Ayotte and Collins. These are like, I don't know, traitors to the cause, man. You know what I mean? Traitors
mm-hmm.
to their own race, their own
independent
species, their own gender.
Angus King of Maine joins them, making the minimum 40 needed to sustain the filibuster and kill the bill. So all those Maine people.
Yeah,
are against
yeah.
Them.
I mean, what the hell's wrong with these people? I mean, what's wrong with them? They're sick in the head. All right. And
I thought Maine was supposed to be a bit progressive.
No, not really.
I guess
no,
not.
Not really. Not for the most part. They're not. Female Republican Senator, Senators killed the bill 2 days before the Labor Department officially released proposed regulation to order federal contractors to provide pay data breakdowns by gender and race, among other factors. The proposal, opened for public comment on September 17th, was put into effect in Obama administration executive order 6 months ago, telling DOL to develop such standards. The lawmakers killed the Paycheck Fairness Act despite lobbying from the AFL-CIO, AFSCME, the Coalition of Labor Union Women, and the National Partners for Women and Families, among others. AFL-CIO Legislative Director Bill Samuel, in a letter to all senators, called the Paycheck Fairness Act a long overdue measure that would strengthen the Equal Pay Act's ban on workplace discrimination against women. That 51-year-old equal pay law lacks teeth. And, wow, that's 51 years old?
Yeah.
With disparities between women and men are evident today in both the private and public sectors and at every educational level, the Paycheck Fairness Act responds to the shortcomings of the Equal Pay Act and provides targeted remedies designed to update the provisions of that historic law. Women's groups calculate the median fair. Women's groups calculate the median female worker loses $11,600 yearly to the discriminatory wage gap. The loss has been compounded. Wow,
mm-hmm.
That's
not right.
Do you want to read the rest of that?
No, I think we've gotten enough.
Well,
yeah.
Besides protecting workers who discuss pay and forcing employers to prove they do not discriminate against women workers, the Paycheck Fairness Act also would be let wronged women workers file class action suits. Tommy noted, and it would strengthen the government's ability to identify and remedy systematic wage discrimination, he said. More than 50 years ago, the Equal Pay Act was signed into law. Yet 50 years later, women are still paid 77 cents to the dollar compared to men. And the pay gap is even worse for women of color. AFSCME President Lee Saunders and Secretary Laura Reyes said in urging their members to call their lawmakers, that's why Senator Barbara Mikulski introduced the Paycheck Fairness Act, because equal work deserves equal pay. I can't imagine
why those women from Maine.
Well, because
up
obviously their backers were, you know, their corporate backers didn't want that. There's an article I want to talk about tonight that I saw that really is somewhat annoying, and it's about the governors that are running. Some of the governors that are running. Oh my God, like, you know, some of the people that are running for governor
mm-hmm.
in these states, like Wisconsin, one of them, but. But like fully running here.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, the guys scary. These guys are all pretty scary, these guys.
Yes, we did some of that
very,
last
very
week.
Scary. But there was one guy in particular that I was kind of like surprised.
Really scared?
Yeah. No, actually, I was kind of like encouraged, if I could find him. But the guy was, was it called. But the guy is a union guy, right? Running in Michigan.
Yes, we read that last week.
We didn't.
Yes, we did. It was all on last week. It was. We talked about this. The union guy that's running against the governor, for governor.
I'm suffering from dementia, folks, because I don't remember any of that talking about. No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They didn't have the one on Foley on. This should be interesting. Do they have a audio piece on Foley?
Yeah. This guy, too. I think we did that one.
Well, back to Foley, because that should be interesting what they say about him.
Well, five reasons why Tom Foley is one of the worst candidates for working families in the 2014 elections.
It's an election year, and we are quickly approaching the time when working families will have the opportunity to go to the polls and vote against a whole host of extreme candidates who support policies that limit rights, make it even harder to afford a middle-class life, and pad the pockets of their corporate buddies. One of the worst candidates for working families in the 2014 election is Tom Foley, who is running for governor of Connecticut. Let's go to read more. It's a flattering picture of him. I don't think he looks that good most of the time. Okay. It's an election year, and we're... Okay, Foley, here are five reasons why Foley is bad for working people. Number one, Foley wants to repeal the state's law that requires employers to allow workers to earn paid sick days. He's using the same tired arguments against paid sick days that have already failed to come true in Connecticut. Number two, he opposes raising the state's minimum wage. Number three, Foley favors policies that will outsource jobs from the state. There are probably big opportunities to save money by outsourcing, he said. Number four, he would end other benefits for workers, including some health care coverage requirements and existing benefits for retirees. Number five, Foley says he should be governor because of his business experience. But his experience is in laying off thousands of workers and making millions of profits doing so. He even went so far as to tell workers to their faces that it was their fault he closed the plant, saying, "You have lost these jobs." There's a video on that. We should play that.
Oh, is that the one? That's the one they've been saying. Tell workers to their faces, yeah. As far as tell workers to their faces, it was their fault he closed the plant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice guy.
Yeah, let's see what that one's about. Hurting
the same community.
Oh, this is Jesus.
It's an unfortunate community because of this.
Let's play a little bit of that.
Well, I am, but it's not.
Policies which are anti-business and have slowed our economy has cost 140 jobs. That's 140 jobs that this community can't afford. The largest tax increase in the history of Connecticut has slowed our economy and has increased pressure on businesses. We have anti-business policies are being mandated on employers that raise their cost of hiring people, raise their cost of energy, and raise their cost of doing business here in Connecticut. Ultimately, that drives businesses out of this state. We've seen far too many examples of businesses leaving Connecticut, unfortunately. And we simply need a smarter set of policies to support businesses and employers in communities like this and across the state so we can arrest the effects of the job. A couple of the things that we need to do, number one, is we need to stop corporate welfare. Handing out billions of taxpayer dollars to bribe businesses to stay here when you're implementing anti-business policies that are driving them out is like stepping on the accelerator and the brake at the same time. We simply have to stop doing that. Let's get our foot off the brake. Let's try and make this a state that is more welcoming and accommodating to employers and their needs. As governor, I'll be able to do that. I have a business background. I spent 35 years in the business community. And so I understand what employers need and want to hear from a leader to be willing to invest and remain in a state like Connecticut. I know I can do that. We simply need smarter policies, and we need a leadership and a governor who knows what businesses need and can be start to restore confidence in this state so that employers will stay here, understand that we'll get control over state spending, which is out of control right now, and get us headed in a better direction on a path toward pride and prosperity that we're here as recently as 3 or 4 years ago before this governor became governor.
So would a Foley administration not have given the low-interest loan to this company?
Listen, some incentives and some credit support programs are work, but I think under Governor Malloy, the First Buy program and the large corporate welfare programs have not worked. We've seen that $400 million
company,
is
there not any circumstances under which it makes sense for
investors
to sell off
leases
to get
a
bigger return for the investors?
Not if it's a profitable plan.
So,
if it's profitable and earning cash, then they should want to keep it open. There's no reason to shut it.
Have you reached out to the First Selectman of Spring?
No, I have not.
Have you reached out to the union president?
No, I have not.
Have you reached out to the company itself to find out why they are leaving the area? Have you talked with the management of the company here?
No, I've read what was announced in the press and some of the remarks.
So you have reached out to, you have not reached out to
the
company?
Are you a member of the press?
I am the First Selectman of Craig.
Okay, well.
And so I know, I actually know.
Any,
but
any
but
the press?
Have you done any analysis about why this company in particular was sold and is being shut down? I mean, you chose this time and place to make your larger point. So,
well, obviously they're not making money here. It was reported in the press that they weren't able to service the debt and they weren't able to make this a going concern of the work. And that has a lot to do with
but you have not reached out to the company, so you don't know about that, Mr. Foley. You have
I understand that, but this
may be your press conference, but Eastern Connecticut is extremely important to me. There are 145 jobs that we have lost here, and we have all worked hard here. You have the human resources director here.
Okay, but why have you lost them, man? Why have you not succeeded?
Because the company made open gate. The parent company has chosen to sell off this to, as you did with the Bibb Corporation, as you did, you sold off the company as an investment firm to make money. And the company decided that they preferred to make money as an international company, not an international investment firm, not to save
these jobs. You have failed at your effort to keep these jobs here, haven't you?
You
failed, and Governor Malloy has failed along with you.
And
you've wasted taxpayers' money. You've wasted taxpayers' money.
No, that money is all going to be repaid.
Is it really?
It is.
Are you sure?
Yes, I am.
How can you
assure me
that?
Because unlike you, I have actually talked to the company. I have actually been here. I was here within 10 minutes of the announcement here. I wasn't here a week and a half later to have a press conference with people. I actually care about what happens in Eastern Connecticut. We waited an hour for you to come here for a press conference in front of a company that is not even Fusion. Fusion is up there. This is Caristar. This is not Fusion. Yes, we lost this company, but not through the failure of either the governor, the town, or the USW. I ran a family business for 40 years.
Yeah.
And sometimes people who are in business make decisions on the bottom line, not for the plant itself. And if you understood the paper company and the paper industry, you would know that Paperworks out of Indiana took possession of this equipment in order to decrease the size of the market. Decrease the size. And I would have appreciated if you had called me and said, hey, is there anything I can do if you are a businessman who's interested in jobs in Eastern Connecticut? I would have appreciated if you had reached out to me. As the Republican First Selectman in Lisbon, in Franklin, and the Democratic First Select Woman in Lebanon, and First Selectman in Basra, and the First Mayor in Norwich, all
reached out to me. When I'm governor, ma'am, I will reach out to you, but I'm not governor right now. We have a governor right now.
But you are a businessman who is interested in helping to save jobs. And
you have not given an idea here today
you,
that would have done that.
Yeah, but you have no economic development committee in Sprague.
Right.
There is no economic development committee in this town. Maybe that has something to do with it. There's
Man,
no economic development.
I just stand here because
when you failed, you've lost 140 jobs. Yes.
I'm Rich Rowland, the president of school. Yeah. I've been employed here for almost 29 years.
Yeah.
I've been through.
Are you upset? You lost your job?
Am I upset? Yeah, 145 people lost their jobs, okay? We went through 6 years of concessions to keep this place running, okay?
Right.
We just signed a six-year contract March 15th.
Right.
30 days later, they tell us they're closing.
So exactly my point.
Like
ma'am,
doesn't
you say
like
you
that.
Have the word from the management, and he says that he can't trust what they say, so... Listen, you just failed here.
You're talking about
you've
two different
policies.
You're not listening to the man. The man is not saying management.
We need a new direction.
None of us.
We need new policies, and that's what I'll bring.
And one of the policies here that has worked very well, which you may not be aware of, is all personal property does not have...
Worked very well, and you've lost 140 jobs?
Because Open Gate made a decision to decrease the size of the paper industry in the... United States,
right.
And they sold the equipment, not because they weren't making a profit. If you knew, they have 17 days of back orders, which is completely unusual in this company. The people
at
this...
I simply, you just apparently
Rich,
don't have the business experience.
Wanna,
people don't close
Rich,
a perfectly good plan.
Yes. Okay? When we have a 17-day backlog, okay, that's a lot for us.
And I can say,
you know what? This company's been here since 1962.
I know. So why are they
backing up and leaving? Why is State of Connecticut losing so many jobs?
Exactly.
But this company didn't sell the property. Right. They sold the paper machine to take us out of the loop. They didn't sell the property. They didn't sell the land.
Right.
They didn't sell the building.
They
sold the
machine. If they were making money.
They were making money.
Same thing.
Have you seen the financial statements? They have. They see the financial statements every
month.
They get them.
Once a month.
You failed, ma'am. You failed. The governor failed to keep these jobs here.
She failed. But I'll tell you right now.
From the media.
Instead of saying, I really
your
don't.
Is,
you're right. I really
no
need to take a look and talk to people.
Do that for the investors. If in a business like this, the equipment is worth more than the earnings that it's making, no, that's a company that's not making a high enough return on investment to keep a facility, keep jobs. It's the fundamental axiom of business. So if the equipment is worth more than what they're earning on the equipment and the labor, then that's a failing operation. And the first black woman here at Governor Boy has helped drive this business out of Connecticut.
And I disagree with that.
I disagree with that.
You know what? The USW did everything possible. Even you, my local, did everything possible for this company. You know what? They were making money, but you know what they did? They undermined us, and they took the paper machine, they sold the paper machine. You're a businessman.
That's right.
Can you close mills down?
Yep.
Have you ever made a decision?
I have never closed
mills down. Have
you? The bottom line
investment firm, I've talked with the people who pay the bills. That's who I talk to is the regular workers and the management here at this mill, which you readily admit you have not talked to. You readily admit you don't even know this company. You readily admit that you did not talk to the union's president or any of the workers here. You readily admit that. You readily admit that you did not reach out to the first selectman of town. You readily admit all of those things that you didn't.
I know what happened here. You understand the paper market?
He doesn't understand the paper market. I'm
one of the employees that is affected by this
law. I understand the jobs have left here.
This is a market-driven decision.
Not
a decision of her, of Governor Malloy, or anyone else. If you understood the paper industry,
correct.
Plastic is overtaking cardboard.
day by day by day. The industry changes. I'm just telling you that.
We have. But please understand.
I don't want to blame people.
I'm not blaming people. Malign management.
Listen,
you have failed because you've lost your
job. These guys work their butts off.
Exactly.
Every single day, I watch them work. Right. Me too. Her too. Anyone who's being affected by this worked our asses off. We did not. We did not cause this. She did not agree. The market rules this business into this position.
It is.
And that's when we should have had the help. The understanding of...
We'll agree to disagree on this. I think it's
close it and go move on.
With mandate, higher taxes for your employees and your executives. And all the other... And higher energy costs. This governor's driven up energy costs. Everybody's electric bill is higher, but particular business electric bills are higher. For a plant like this, they use a lot of electricity. So you drive up their energy costs, all of a sudden they can't make money. And then all of a sudden, yeah, maybe the equipment's worth more than they can make here, and that's why they make decisions like this.
So the only thing I dislike
about this whole conversation is bring anyone that is here and affected into the process.
We didn't invite you either.
But we're here to talk to you because we want to hear what you have to offer.
Yeah.
And we want to hear, but when you come, please make sure that your facts are straight and that you're not blaming the wrong entity because we didn't do it. We didn't.
I'm just saying that
we are the guys that 60 days from now, we will have no job.
Collectively, the town and the state, the town did not cause it.
The $250 business entity tax will save money. And they will not because these guys here worked every day.
Whoa.
That's the negative signal. I think the fiscal disaster that he's created, the tax increase, these all put burdens on working families, including executives and plant managers they have to live around here who may be confused about where they want to live. So all these policies collectively are pushing people out of the state of Connecticut, and it's a disaster.
Humphrey, you said you didn't agree with the $400,000 for UTC and probably
$400 million,
and $3 million for this company. But what kind of economic development donation from the state would you be comfortable with?
Well, it's been shown that if you provide incentives that cost more than about half of the annual salary of an employee, it doesn't make economic sense. It's bad policy for the state. Virtually every one of the first five programs that Governor Molloy has approved. Far exceeded that. Certainly UTC does. The Jackson Labs deal is $300 million for 300 jobs. It's $1 million a job. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's a huge waste of taxpayer money. But certain types of credit programs, credit programs where you end up with a company that moves out of town a few months or certainly before the debts mature, doesn't make sense. Bad policy. But some support for business, but primarily trying to help businesses keep their costs low, not being regulatory zealots and tying them up, paperwork.
I think we've seen enough of them, but, what do you think?
Well, I think he doesn't get it, but you can't scream at someone from all different directions, and you have to have a better kind of dialogue than that to come to any kind of solution. I mean, he has a mantra that he sticks to. You know, you've lost, you've failed, I understand business. They're trying to talk about people. Let me finish.
Yeah, okay.
They're talking about people. He's talking about money. For him, they're talking about people who have worked hard in a company that was making a profit. He's saying the company wouldn't be leaving if they couldn't make more money doing something else. He said the company probably is leaving because they could get more for the machines that make the paper than it's worth paying the people to run these machines to make the paper.
He's right. But at the same time...
But they're talking about people who've worked hard for 35 years in a company that's making a profit.
Yeah.
And why are they selling the machines?
The
they feel betrayed.
Yeah. Well, it's the same see, it's the same mentality that he had when he sold that bib company.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, what he did, what they did, is the same thing that Romney did.
Mm-hmm.
All right, is Romney, what they would do is they would go into these companies, build them all, borrow, okay, against all of their
assets,
all their equipment, their assets, and their pensions.
All the money.
And borrow against all of it, then file bankruptcy, boom.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So they got all the cash, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're left with nothing.
And the
so
people
that's what he's doing here.
And he thinks that's okay.
Exactly.
He's left these people high and dry. They signed contracts, six-year contracts in March, and the company decides in September that they're going to close. And how many incentives did they get to stay in Connecticut?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And what kind of tax breaks?
Exactly.
I feel like if a company is given tax breaks or incentives and they decide to close,
then they should get those incentives all back.
That should
that
all
money
go back.
Should come back
that
to the state.
That
exactly.
money should go back to the state.
I feel very strongly about that.
I
mean, they shouldn't be leaving. And it's like, this stuff is
We're not hard enough on these people.
No. And they're saying,
well,
this guy here, they're saying the ads that are going against Foley, all right, it makes sense because they're saying that he is giving away jobs to
mm-hmm.
other states, all right? He wants to give away jobs. He wants to outsource. He wants to, you know, the guy is a vulture capitalist.
Yeah.
That's what he is. So, I mean,
he went to Iraq.
Oh, my God, when he went to Iraq during the biggest corrupt period in Iraq.
Carried the money over there and carried it back from Sulfur.
Exactly. I mean, I wouldn't doubt it if he was under Bush and that whole mess in Iraq. I mean, it was a big...
He was involved in that. What kind of credential is that for running a state?
And not only that, how did he get that appointment,
mm-hmm.
all right? I mean, because he
was appointed ambassador of Ireland too.
Yeah,
God, that he represented us for Ireland.
But this is what I'm trying to say: under one of the most corrupt administrations we've ever had, under
mm-hmm.
the Bush administration, right?
Would you really want him as your government?
Yeah, I mean, this is what I'm saying. I have no, and the guy scares the death out of me.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Me too.
That he could possibly wind up being the governor, and you know. I don't know.
He'll immediately pardon Roland.
Oh, yeah. Roland will get a pardon. Okay.
Probably become a...
And all the other crooks and criminals in the state. Because
will rise.
What he's done is he has aligned himself with all the right-wing groups and everything that in the state. Gun lobbies and,
He's a Romney.
He's a Romney. Exactly. But I think... One, I think he might even be worse than a Romney, in that Romney had some liberal
leanings.
This guy doesn't. This guy is just one big vulture capitalist, and that's all he is. And you can tell in this interview, you failed, that's it, you're done, you're cooked, I don't even know what the hell I'm doing here, I'm sorry I came,
He has no interest in people.
I don't think so.
He's a bean counter. That's what he is. He's the guy that, would be shut up in some kind of cubicle
of beans. Yeah. Be counting beans. Look at the bottom line.
There's the bottom line. Yeah, nobody means anything.
No, just cut their throat.
People like that shouldn't be positions of responsibility.
I don't know. Again, Malloy was a hatchet man,
too. Well, he's a prosecutor.
Yeah. But he was a hatchet man, too. When he came in, he started cutting all kinds of stuff. And tax increases and everything else, but I don't know. If you get Tweedledee Tweedledum, it's a really bad situation to be in. But this guy is once again, it was like Obama and McCain.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got? Sarah Palin. Come on. You're putting up crap for crap, and the one that smells the best, okay, is the one who's gonna win. I think Foley, he hasn't bankrupted. He's gotten us back on the right track.
Malloy.
I'm sorry, Malloy. got us back in some way, all right. But
I just want him to stand up to the electric company.
Yeah, I'd like to see him stand up to that one. If he did that, he'd win the election.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't, you know, he's just going to...
Because let me tell you, the middle class and...
Getting clobbered.
Will get clobbered if that tax goes in, if that increase goes in. And you get everybody's vote if you stand up against that. And personally, I preferred that first dialogue between the two where Malloy was more aggressive.
He got criticized
for that. I don't know by whom. I thought he was fabulous.
I thought he was good at that first one too. I really did.
I think he was told to tone it down a bit.
Yeah, well,
I personally liked.
You know, Foley's been saying, "Well, you're too mean. You're so mean
God,
to me."
God, if he whines anymore, I can't
stand
his voice,
I have to tell you. And he says, "You're too mean to me." That's what he said. Yeah, you know, it's like, why are you being so mean? You know? And yet, if you look at Foley's ads coming after Malloy, okay, they're just as bitter, they're just as negative, right? But, you know, so Foley is just that. And, you know, unless Malloy really, really stands up and knocks this guy over the head, okay, it's so typical of Republicans. They'll go after and try to cut a guy's throat. But if the guy starts to cut their throat, they
then
start screaming, "Oh, gee whiz, you're being so mean
they
to
whine,
me."
They whine. This guy
they
has a whiny voice, too,
and
they
whine,
can't
and
see
they say, "Oh, stop hitting me, please." You know what I mean? That's what they do.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we've come right to the end of the show.
It's
9 o'clock, so we wish you a good night, and thanks for being with us. And stay tuned tomorrow night for Leo.
Dimensional Radio.
And his talk.
Okay.
So good night, folks.